This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
We want to follow up on a story this is from a couple of months ago now, if you remember. DeAndre Baker of the Giants was arrested along with Quentin Dunbar of the Seahawks, involved in, a very bizarre,
game.
This was in May. Yeah. They were gambling, flipped over a table, came back, brought guns, robbed everybody, left. Initially, as the story begins, everybody that was interviewed by police gave their account and named those two guys as the culprit, as the leaders, the ringleaders. And then all of a sudden, when it came to testify for testimony, that wasn't what happened.
Thief.
And then now completely everybody now suddenly didn't have anything to say. And then came out a report a couple of days ago. The Daily News was reporting that the players, or at least a lawyer for one of the players, was paying off people to just change their statements.
Did he cash out?
I hope not.
He wasn't that dumb, was he? I mean, come on, man. You got to cover your track. See, you can say a lot of stuff about Greg Hardy, not a good guy. His payoff was legit. The fact that he paid it off the right way. Like, if you go, you're a lawyer. Like, I can see if DeAndre was giving the dudes the money. But you're supposed to be better than that, man. Why didn't you call Cohen? You know what I mean? He could have showed you how to pay him off, right? No traces, man.
So it's again, they paid witnesses to kind of like make it seem not as bad as it originally sounded, right? And yet, Paul Schwartz of the Post talked to Baker's lawyer, Patrick Patel, who said that only made their case even stronger because he feels like now it just should be completely dismissed because of all these other allegations. So he feels like that they're pretty confident that this is all just going to go away and that it's silly. Well, now we go to Daniel Wallach, who is a gaming law and sports betting attorney who has court documents that Quentin Dunbar's defense attorneys have withdrawn from the case, replaced by new counsel, who has now changed served discovery request in Broward State attorney's office. Because one of the attorneys has been implicated in a scheme to bribe a witness.
Oh, God. And that's, man.
So this now just suddenly just took a quick turn. Like, whoa. And again, this is Dunbar. We don't know. Here's the problem with stories like this is, you know, I'm not going to say we were guilty of it, but this is what we do. We get information right away on a story. You hear about Baker. You know already he came into the draft with some issues. You remember that, Bar. You brought it up. And so you said, uh-oh, okay, this kid now involved in something. This is bad. And you want to right away think the Giants are just going to cut their ties with him. They didn't invite him to any of the virtual workouts and stuff like that. They told him just to handle your business. But now you understand that, okay, well, wait a minute. Now a lot of the reports have changed. A lot of the witness accounts have changed. So maybe we all jumped the gun. Maybe this kid's innocent. Maybe he's being framed. But then you see stuff like this, and now it's getting more twisted. And now it just leads you to believe that whatever's going on right now, I mean, the Giants open camp in 2 weeks? A week?
Yeah.
I mean, right now, he's still kind of in limbo. And if you're the Giants, you don't know what to think. Do you bring him in and have him work out throughout this thing? This is not going to end anytime soon, Bart.
I don't think he can. I mean, I think he goes on the commissioner exempt list.
He has to.
You know, he's going to go in there because the NFL doesn't want to have pie on their face to be having a armed criminal. You know, because remember, that's considered a violent crime whenever it's guns involved. And so, like, you know, it's going to be incompetent that, you know, that they say, you know what, handle your business, sit down. But then that puts the Giants in the market again for another corner, somebody that they thought that they can depend on. And, you know, what's going to happen is these witnesses are going to have to sign a sworn affidavit underneath the pressure that if you get caught lying to us, and it's already holes in these stories already, you get caught lying to us, then you're going to be in contempt of perjury. And then that's when people say, you know what? Nah, man, it's a threat. It's a fact that I can go to jail. and I have to trust the idiots that you guys already hired because you already got people out there telling.
But that's the other. Now that's again. Paid. That's Dunbar's lawyers now. See again, Patel is the one that's working with Baker.
Yeah.
And the one thing that to keep an eye on here is as Patel was telling Paul Schwartz, the whole point is that they were trying to out. I think it's Greco, the other lawyer. The one that has now been implicated on bribing witnesses, and it's as if he might have been working. I don't know. I'm trying to read between the lines here, but basically what Patel said to Schwartz was this: is we wanted to flush them out and see what they were trying to do. We didn't go to the meeting, you know, where to pay off people. We didn't pay. We were telling DeAndre. Write him, ask him what does he want, what time does he want. We were the ones who controlled the narrative. Baker had no intention of ever going. He was just trying to solicit the information of the blackmail. So this thing just goes deeper and deeper.
Oh, man, so now you're telling on your boy or the dude that you were there with. So now that's a whole nother implication because he going to tell you. You think if you tell on him, he ain't going to tell what he know about you? He ain't going to go down by itself, especially if you're the one who exposed him. This is going to get a lot messier before it gets better, man. If I was Giants fans, I would,
this is crazy. Patel points out that Dunbar's lawyer, Michael Greco, secured the affidavits from witnesses recanting their stories, which suggests that Greco and Dunbar did indeed make the payments. The Dunbar's in some trouble, huh?
Yep, and you think he going to go down by himself? You seen Sugar. You seen Juice. You know Nino Brown. Oh, if I'm going down, I'm taking a whole lot of people with me.
New Jersey.
You best believe. This is going to get messy, man. And, you can't feel bad for them because they put themselves in this situation, but they're just compounding, the issue.
See, the bigger problem I have now is that I don't even know what could possibly be the truth here. Was it a robbery now? What was it? Let's just get to the heart of it. Were they coming back to get money that was taken from them? Which still there's a crime there because you brought guns. Or was it just a straight-up robbery? Like, what was it? Let's just go there. Like, you could talk all you want about how you're trying to corroborate witnesses and pay off witnesses. That's another story completely. But let's just get back to, the root of the matter is what was the kid involved in? If you're the Giants, that's all you care about. What was he involved in? And how did he get involved? And how much of it leads us to say we need to move on? What a wild story this is becoming, though. A wild story.
It's only going to get wilder, too. It's only going to get wilder.
Yeah, no question. There's definitely no question about that. It's Barton Howard, presented by Progressive Insurance, with more than 30 unique coverage options available. Progressive knows small business. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. So, Bart, do we have a Boone injury update on Aaron Judge? I have not. Oh, it's yesterday?
Man, Aaron Judge is probably about two more injuries.
Yeah, it's the neck thing.
For me to start calling him Glass Joe.
No, I don't know if I want to go there.
He just gets hurt too much, man. He's so great of a player, man. We never get to see his greatness because he's never available, man. I mean,
the scariest thing for me in a short season is so far knowing that my closer now has the illness.
I don't think it's that big a deal.
Yeah. That DJ LeMahieu, who was like your MVP last year, has the illness.
You know what? I don't know.
Yeah. Sessa was, he's a useful pitcher. But the bigger issue right now is that Aaron Judge, who was hurt all through spring training and never really, we didn't hear any updates at all. Then was like, oh, no, he's fine. Everything's good. The rib's good. Now the neck hurts. And that's why I asked that question. You've got this lineup that's scary when they're all together. In a 60-game season, you need them together as much as possible. It's not like 162 where you're like, he's going to play. It'll be fine. You'll go through. Right. You'll have players that can fill in. Remember, that was the big story. The Talkmans and the Fords and all these dudes that came out of nowhere that helped get you through it.
Urshela.
Like, you had guys that you didn't really know what you were going to get out of them, and they carried you through the season. You can't do that in a 60-game season. You can't rely on that in a 60-game season. They've got to be ready to go and healthy this season. But I don't know. Is that enough, or do you say, I'd rather them just be healthy when the playoffs begin? Because does the season really matter as long as you get there?
Well, I guess when you talk about if, as long as they're healthy, nobody was going to want to go against them or match up against them. But what about being able to get in the groove? What about the performance, right? When Judge came back, you can see he clearly didn't have his timing throughout the postseason. He was chasing a lot of things outside of the zone. He didn't start showing a lot more plate discipline. Stanton as well. These are guys that's got to see good elite pitching. And we've already talked about, you know, the pitching being ahead of the hitting right now. So then if you're injured and then you come back and then the pitching is just going to get better and better and you're not going to have your timing down, like, who's to say you can't get upset maybe by a team like the Twins who's been knocking on the door? We're talking about the Yankees being – and listen, I know that the Yankees always beat the mess out of the Twins. But it's just going to be difficult to when you can't depend on maybe your closer coming back and having to figure things out. And then, you know, maybe you move Zach Britton to your closer the time being. But if I'm the Yankees, I'm looking – maybe I got to bring Parakreek Man back, you know what I mean, to be able to try and put some power in that lineup, some fear in that lineup. And then I may have to look at already and trying to secure another arm, a closer.
You would think that Chapman just should come through the virus and then be able to play, right? Like, we haven't seen it where somebody had the illness and then just all of a sudden they're just shot. You know, we haven't seen an athlete really like that yet. But
well, the chronic fatigue part of it, right?
That's what I mean is like, how does it affect his readiness for the season? I think is where exactly. That's what I'm really more concerned with. But the Judge thing just worries me. And as I mentioned when we did Blitzer Prevent, I wasn't trying to make a joke, but it's true. Gary Sanchez, Giancarlo Stanton, and obviously and Aaron Judge are three guys that when they're in the middle of your lineup, that is as dangerous a lineup. And I didn't even mention Gleyber Torres' name. And Andujar, who, by the way, is also back with this team. You know, DJ LeMahieu, what he can do. But those three guys in the middle of your lineup, it makes that lineup scary. And you out of 60 games, how many games do you think they're going to play together? How many out of 60? Let's start this way. How many games should they play if they were fully healthy out of 60, knowing the schedule is going to be a little rough? Would you say they should play 50?
I would say 45.
Together, I mean now. I don't mean they're all going to miss games together.
No,
they're going to spread them out.
I'm saying 45.
As a group, they should be at least 45 to 50 games.
Yeah, I would say 45. You know, you want to give guys, you know, days off. Make sure that they're healing up properly, especially when you got the big guys and early on. You want to make sure, you know, guys like Gardner's going to be able to kind of get a day off. You want to make sure that guys like Hicks are able to establish a rhythm because they've been injured, so they're adjusting. You know, so you let those guys play in the outfield, and you try and protect Stanton from playing as little as outfield. You know, the great thing would be to have Stanton as your DH all the time and then try and give Sanchez time at it. But, you know, you're going to have to rotate that a little bit to get other guys healthy, and you want to try and get Andujar some time. You know what I mean? Because he's like that super utility guy. Where is he playing at? You know what I mean? So you want to try and get him in a pinch in case Voit gets injured again. You want to kind of get him a little first base, give him a little third base, give him that outside, you know, the outfield as well. So it's going to be a lot to kind of maneuver through.
I just don't know if they're going to ever play together. That's the, you know, and Boone saying Chapman won't be with the team for the foreseeable future is basically because he has to probably clear the test a number of times before, like quarantine, then test negative enough times that you feel it's safe now to let him back into the general population, as they would say.
Yeah, good thing it happened now, because if it would have happened, say, the start of the season, that's potentially 21 games without him. You know
what? That's the thing with baseball, especially football. But baseball and the fact that they're going to be traveling with no bubble is like, what if we got to like the ALCS? And whoever it is on, you know, I mean, what if Scherzer is, they're in the NLCS, somehow the Nationals get back to the NLCS and Max Scherzer now has COVID. He can't. He's out. Right?
Yeah.
Like, what if the Mets have a run and Pete Alonso gets it? And now they don't have him in the lineup at all for a playoff series.
Well, that's why I talk about.
Because he's mandatory. You've got to now be away from team quarantine. Like, there's no like, he could play. Like, when Michael Jordan had the flu game. Mm-hmm. Played through it. Whatever it was. This illness didn't matter. He played through it. You can't do that. They won't let you do that.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing, right? Because the fact is, now you got to ask players to report things. Because what if it's in between being tested? Because they're not getting tested every day. What if it's in between being tested? And what if he says, I don't feel well, but he doesn't share that with everybody? Then now you potentially put everybody else at risk. Because, you know, today's the day I got a pitch. I'm asymptomatic.
Right.
I'm spreading. but I'm just going to try and isolate myself and keep myself away from everybody. Maybe I tell somebody and then I stay away from everybody else, but then I may not be feeling my best. But I know that if I pitch today, we can go to the championship. I can quarantine afterwards.
Well, it's gonna be. It's gonna be part of the story. All of it's gonna be part of the story. That is, you know, we just have to see who's that team. What team is going to be on that unlucky streak where it hits them? Because you know it's going to happen. Throughout the season, players are just going to get this thing because they're going to be traveling so much and playing games, and it's almost unavoidable. You have to just expect it. Who is the player? In the NBA bubble, all things considered, it's the bubble, it's a restart, everything, right?
Yeah.
Who's the one player you're dying to see play the most?
It's funny.
Like you're like, I, if the first game that guy's playing, I'm watching it. Who is it?
It's Crawford, man. I just want to see like what the Jamal. Old man's been up to. I want to see what the old man's been up to.
40 years old.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like he coming out.
It's not
like
the young man. It's not Zion. And no, see, is he really as lean and mean as he looks?
Nah, because he's going to be point. You know, he's going to be a pogo stick. He's going to be dunking, and he's still big enough to keep people on his shoulders. You know, because he's still big enough to hold people almost like Oliver Miller, like yeah. Because of their girth. I hate to say that. You know, Paul.
Phrasing.
Yeah, he's able to kind of like play taller than what he really is, and because he can jump and re-jump so fast, I want to see what Crawford and Beasley's been up to. Because Beasley can be like a walker.
It is true. The Nets are going to be interesting.
Beasley,
but they also, but both guys are like complete. Just they're always
ball hogs. They got the ball all the
green
time.
Green light, like right. Both of them, the perpetual green light.
So do you separate them? Let Beasley come in with the second group and just straight
great
buckets. Because you don't know. You know he doesn't have great defense. But he's a guy that can go for 15 to 18 in a quarter. I mean, he's the same guy that they were saying MVP at Madison Square Garden, man. He is that talented offensively, though. And then now you have then you have the sixth man. Yeah, I know. Then you have the sixth man that's coming in that you told me his last game he put up 51.
He did.
You told me he put 51 up, man.
51. Yeah, he
and
did.
So you got two guys with the I don't give a you know what meter, real, real low. Because what are they going to do, bench me, cut me? Who cares? I ain't coming back next year anyway.
That's the other thing. If you're those guys, especially if you're Beasley, and you got Jacques Vaughn like telling you like, pass the ball. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm the Vaughn, I'm the second best offensive player you got on this squad. So you can shut up because you ain't coming back either.
Man.
You just better ride this hot way. Hope
that'll
I get
be interesting.
Hot.
I thought Zion would be one, but I'll tell you what. Audiophiles, we have one that I know a lot of people are looking to see. So let's get to Audiophiles now.
The Audiophile.
Of course it's your favorite player. It's LeBron James. Yeah. That's your guy. You can't wait to see him play. Now, on a serious note, as you know, the league is allowing players to, instead of putting their last name on the back of the jersey, you can put different messages of social awareness, as a lot of players have chosen to do that. LeBron has chosen to have his last name remain on the jersey. It's going to say James.
Straight.
He wasn't involved, he said, in the process of choosing messages and everything else. So he's sticking with his last name, and here's his explanation of why.
I actually didn't go with a name on the back of my jersey. And it was, it's no disrespect to the list that was handed out to all the players. I commend anyone that decides to put something on the back of their jersey. It's just something that didn't really, seriously resonate with my mission, with my goal. I would have loved to have a say-so on what would have went on the back of my jersey. I had a couple of things in mind, but I wasn't a part of that process, which is okay. I'm absolutely okay with that. So what I will continue to do, off the floor and when I'm talking to you guys and when I'm, everything that I do has a purpose and has a meaning. So I don't need to have something on the back of my jersey for people to understand my mission or know what I'm about.
What do you think about him going with just his last name and the explanation of why he's doing it that way?
Branding. I want to make sure I continue to sell my playoff jerseys. But also the fact that I didn't want to have something on the back of my name that somebody on the back of my jersey that somebody else can pick because I'm picking from the same pool that they got. So if you would have let me be involved in the process, and I could have had my own phrase.
So I wanted a unique phrase for me.
Because then he could sell that unique phrase because it's like having James on the back. So having whatever phrase I want and nobody else can use it allows me to sell that special jersey, or Nike to sell that exclusive special jersey and make it a collector's item, because after this year, it'd be the only time that you can do that. Listen, I spent a lot of time around primetime. Deion Sanders is one of the best marketing people of himself that you'll ever be around. I mean, come on, he's primetime. Two sports athlete, you know, Deion, you know, whatever. That's a Deion move. Deion's like, yo, I'm not about to share the same name as everybody else. Then what makes my jersey special? He had ideas, right? Meaning that he thought about what he would want to put on the back of his jersey. It wasn't available because they didn't involve him in the process, and because he wanted his own stuff. And there's no way that they could have made him his own name. Somebody else could have picked it. Then it would have been Wacky D, because they've been saying who made it first, LeBron or the people that picked it.
Wacky D. Well, Anthony Davis, by the way, is also keeping his last name, and his reasoning was because he said he wants to honor his family name, and also feels like he could still impact social change in other ways. I think you're making that point, right? A lot of players are choosing these phrases, but it's a great point. There's going to be no uniqueness to it.
Right.
And for the superstars, that's kind of what they want.
It's not like he hate me. He hate me. Everybody picked their own name, so nobody knew what you were picking. Yeah. If I was going to pick one for, if I could just have fun and they let me pick one for Anthony Davis, it would have been Bert.
Bert?
It would have been Bert or Frida.
Frida.
The unibrow. Yeah. You got to show
love.
Well,
brow. Like, brow would have been the obvious one if you wanted to go with just something funny. But this was more about a social message, not something to be funny.
Yeah.
But what's funny, though, is you got players, and we saw JR, we played that the other day, JR talking about his food, having more fun with it. But Rajon Rondo, who now doesn't have to worry about the bubble because he broke his finger, he broke his hand or something, and now he's dealing with that. He called Motel 6, right? That's he thought the accommodations were poor. Everybody's making fun of the food and the setup and everything else. And I think, you know, again, it's funny for a minute, but then regular people have got to be looking at it going, guys, are you kidding me? You know, like do we really want to hear about how the brie isn't room temperature? Jay Williams on Get Up is saying these players are absolutely tone deaf.
I don't think this is applicable to the majority of NBA players. This is a minute few, but I don't want this to paint a negative picture for the majority of people that are down there to go to work and to do what they have to do. I just think that some of the, even though they were said in a playful manner, a lot of the comments that were made over the last couple of days have been tone deaf. And when you think about to what degree that the NBA has gone to create this billion-dollar bubble, the protective measure place to protect these athletes while they make millions of dollars, I think when they make comments like that, it takes away, especially from, you know, everyday people who are working 9-to-5 jobs, who are working in environments where the same protective measures aren't being taken because a lot of their employers are trying to increase the bottom line due to the money that they've lost throughout this pandemic. And so for everyday working Americans, and I'm not saying that athletes aren't working Americans, because they are, but the workload is different when you look at the comparison of the two. And I just think that the NBA has a chance to be such a game changer in the way these athletes are going to speak about systemic racism and injustice. And by doing little things like that, even though in a joking like manner, it takes away from what the bigger cause is, which should be the cause they should be focusing on.
I guess the players are just showing up and being human with their reaction to things, but it probably does have to stop, right? It's funny once, but Now it's enough. Like, I don't need to hear from every player complaining about it. But the NBA bubble Twitter is, like, very popular.
I mean, Jay Will's taking himself a little bit too serious.
Oh?
I mean, yeah, Jay Will talking about, you know, the NBA has an opportunity to be a game changer. You can't put yourself above any of the other sports. I think baseball's doing their part. You know, I think basketball's doing their part. Football's doing their part. Bubba Wallace is doing his part, and NASCAR's doing their part. So don't try and, you know, separate the NBA from everybody else. Everybody's doing their collective part. But, you know, these are guys in a moment where they're trying to entertain themselves inside of a bubble where they can't really go anywhere, just kind of joking around and having fun, and they're not doing it and talking about it at a press conference. They're not calling in to Woj or somebody like that and saying, hey, I'm giving you an exclusive. Let me tell you about how bad the food is and accommodations are. They're doing it on a platform like Twitter, TikTok, where that's where people go to have jokes and they have fun. And don't get it. What gets lost sometimes in the tough times that we're in It's the opportunity to laugh and smile and have fun. And that's what the players are trying to incorporate, because one, they're trying to entertain themselves, but two, they're trying to entertain the people that follow them. This is opportunities. I guarantee you every publicist is trying to say, hey, this is an opportunity for you and your downtime to do the things that I always try and get you to do, like post, put content up, because where else are you going to do? What else are you going to do?
This yeah, I like just, but Bart, I understand what you're saying, but I feel like too, it was maybe once or twice you want to show us what food they're serving you, so we're all curious about what's life like in the bubble. Oh, wow, it's coming in this prepackaged, you know, curbside, you know, to go from Applebee's kind of looking stuff.
Yeah.
And at first you're like, oh, okay, that's what it's about, and I guess the player's not too happy about it. But then they have like everybody complaining, and then Rondo calling it a Motel 6 and taking a picture of a room. Like that was clearly, you know, it's a decent room.
Yeah, everything's
a Motel 6. There was nothing wrong with that room.
Everything's a Motel 6.
Like, if you want to show bed bugs, talk to me. Here's what I'll say. Hey, Rajon, and everybody else out there, JR, you want to show me something that it would be shock value? Show me the bed bugs. Show me the bed bugs. Get the black light out and run the black light out and show me whatever is happening on that duvet. All right, you want to do that? Now you'll affect me. But if you're going to tell me that you're not happy with whatever the selection of food is, I'm sorry. Like, that's not going to move me at this point. It was funny once. That's got to stop. And I feel like it does make people then look at the players as if they are completely disconnected, which is exactly what a lot of players said they didn't want to do, right? There's a movement going on. There's protesting. There's a push for social consciousness that we're out there right now. And we're going to go into this bubble, and we're going to play basketball and live in our little world that's completely detached now from reality. And the first thing they do once they go in the bubble is what? They detach themselves from reality, and they start doing things that are, as Jay said, tone deaf. Yeah, and they've got to be careful of that.
Yeah, but has anybody ever went anywhere and said, oh, man, this is the greatest place I've ever been in? People's inclination is to say, you know, it's to complain. Right, it's to complain. So, like, they're just leaning on that, and you talk about like, I can imagine some player – because everybody's getting their own opportunity to be able to complain about it. But I can guarantee somebody's going to come up with a mini show where it's like the Food Chronicles or something like that, right? When they talk about how many times they've eaten the same thing.
Yeah.
Because there's only so many things you can feed somebody, whether it's chicken breast, steak, pasta. You only can do that so many times.
You just loop it.
Yeah, but they're doing that because they're trying to get attention to grow their social media following. And the only way you get that is like page 6. It's to say something.
Shock value?
Have something to complain about.
Yeah.
So that's really what they're doing. I don't think it's any harm. They don't mean it, but they can understand that it could come off tone deaf. But I guarantee you, every time they have to talk to Stephen A. or they have to talk to Rachel Nichols, it's going to be a professional thing. Them talking about, you know, they're going about their business the right way. Guys are coming on that platform. That's the goofy platform. So we're taking a goofy platform and we're making it mainstream media or mainstream news because we're trying to report on everything. But I guarantee you their official reports and things like that after games are going to be right on point and be professional. That's all. They're just acting silly, man. Goofy stuff.
All
it's
right.
Just like episode of Locked Up. Go to Locked Up. They give them the crown and they complain about everything.
Actually, that'd be funny to NBA Locked Up.
Fleece Johnson.
That's one. Who among all NBA players would be the Fleece Johnson? That's what I want to know. Who would it be? But no, don't call in with that. Please don't call in and tell us. I don't even want to know who you'd think would be the Fleece Johnson. But they might have fun, but also having the players all in this one place together could also lead to some other things. Like, remember what happened when all the NBA players went to China and played in the Olympics? What came of it was the Heatles. That's the story. That it was LeBron and Wade started talking about it, and then eventually, a couple of years later, became a real thing. Brian Windhorst on the Hoop Collective pod, he believes that more of that could happen because players are going to start hanging out with each other in Orlando.
It's not like I think that tampering is on everyone's mind. I think it's something that happens naturally, like any friendships would form.
Right.
And this is what is, you know, there's going to be stuff that happens out of this bubble where guys spend time together and become friends, and it affects things that happen down the line, I think. And what you're describing, what you saw, guys eating dinner with each other, is a part of that.
In the bubble,
yeah.
What super team will be a result of this bubble?
It's going to be Donovan Mitchell, Anthony Davis.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And that's it.
Really?
They're gonna see each other in a hallway somewhere, like Kyrie and KD did that time.
Yeah, the Knicks are going to sign Ball, and they're going to trade him on game day to Utah, the rights to him to Utah, and later they're going to take Donovan Mitchell back, so that way they have their replacement, cheaper value, and then Anthony Davis is going to come over too because they're going to get blown out by the Clippers, and Chris Canty's going to have to give me my five stacks.
Oh, yeah, we got to keep an eye on that. Five stacks waiting. I'm looking forward to that matchup. That's going to be something. Last but not least, Bart, you ready for this? Have you ever been on Celebrity Family Feud?
No.
You ever want to be?
I think I would have wanted to be.
You'd probably have a lot of fun doing that, right?
Yeah.
All right, well, this was NFL players were on this one. And Bruce Smith was one. And you know the answers sometimes. I mean, Family Feud, yeah, has had some hysterical responses at times. And we've seen them. They're on YouTube. There's some really good ones. Because you have to blurt out the first thing you could think of, and we always wonder what's on people's minds. That's how you find out. So Steve Harvey always has the best reactions. So listen to this answer from Bruce Smith and listen quickly. Also, make sure you're listening for Steve Harvey's reaction. Go ahead.
If Captain Hook was moonlighting as a handyman, he might replace his hook with what tool?
A hammer.
Try again.
A penis.
Tell me the age a kid is too old to sleep with a what the did he say?
Come on, we can't start this again.
That's his tools?
Is it like a handyman? Yeah.
Is he saying that his penis is a hammer?
Or it's a tool, which, I mean, you know, it depends on how you want to describe it. But
jeez.
I think he just didn't know what else to say. He had hammer in his head. He heard tool, and he just the next thing you think of.
Yeah, something like
but
that.
But how about Steve Harvey just moving on to the next question? And he's, what the?
Oh, no, what? Because it's like the delayed reaction. Like you could have said if you wanted to see his penis.
If you've never
you
seen
said
it,
you could have said a drill. Same thing, same principle.
Naturally, but I don't think Bruce Smith meant to do that. I think it was just it.
So we're just done with phrasing, right? That's not a thing anymore.
Not a thing at all. Because not on that show.
Yes. Yeah,
if you go to YouTube, you can find. All you have to do is Google Family Feud.
Gaffes.
Whatever it is, outtakes. There are some people who have the answers. You will cry laughing, and it's not that they're just dumb answers or wrong answers. Yeah. It's just stuff that you're like, yeah, that's in their head, and they just that, like. There's things you know. We all need a filter, all of us. And there's some people that they can't help it. There is no filter, and in that moment where you know you're on camera. And you got to have an answer quickly. You blurt out whatever's on your mind, and then you realize, I probably shouldn't have done that.
I wonder if he has some work set up for a little later or something, if just on his mind or something. Oh, subliminal.
It's always subliminal, isn't it? Isn't it always subliminal? Stuntman Mike sends us a clip, because you know this is that. And Anthony said he's right. Talk about, like, you could go down a rabbit hole when you do this Family Feud thing, as we just played you the Bruce Smith thing. And it's so all you have to do is just you just Google it. Family Feud, and you could just either funny answers, raunchy answers. It doesn't matter. Like, you'll find anything. The funny answers, though, the things people say. So the one question that Steve Harvey asks this guy is, and again, Stuntman Mike puts this on our at Barton Hunt. He said,
just Google it.
A boy's name that starts with an H.
For the game.
For the game. And the guy's like all proud of himself. He goes, Jose.
He's probably said it with emphasis.
Steve Harvey's face was priceless when he turns and looks at the camera. Oh my God. Anyways, whatever Bruce was thinking at that moment, I don't know.
A new episode comes on tonight, too, I believe, because, my boy is Marlon Humphreys. I think he was on there against some OGs and stuff tonight. So he's been putting out there that his come out there tomorrow or tonight. His come on tonight. So let's see if they fared any better.
Anthony has a good one, too. Here, listen to this.
All right. Real simple. There's one question. Only one answer. Whoever gets it, you're playing for $10,000. That's it. Whoever guesses this wins the game. Here we go. Name Popeye's favorite food.
Chicken.
Show me chicken.
And she danced so happily. For the win. Like, if that's your sister or whatever, like, you, like, honestly, you're not invited. You're not coming home. You're not coming home.
Right. You dummy.
You almost remember, want to see, like, the reality is that everybody just stands there. It'd be hilarious if everybody runs at her and just starts just smacking the crap out of her.
What was it, Mick? Wasn't Mick Popeye's dad on, like, Popeye with Robin Williams? It was Mick. I think Mick was his dad. Everybody knows it's spinach, man.
Oh, my God.
That's the thing.
But it's funny. Look, but you're in that moment. It's just like an athlete. You got to make the shot. Catch it. Make the shot. Make the shot. And do you panic?
Yeah, you freeze up, bro.
So that's the way it goes. Anyways, so Peter Rosenberg, very excited. His team no longer called the Redskins. That's his team. It's Washington. They made that official today. They will retire the name. The Redskins and the logo and everything else. Darryl Green apparently said, I think he was on ESPN on an interview, that he approves this decision and he would consider throwing away his old jerseys. Actually, Dan Graziano had this. He'd throw away his old jerseys and memorabilia in exchange for new ones with the new branding on it.
Listen, I mean, it's one of those things. It's part of history, right? So it's like one of those things that's going to be in the museum.
It's not a good history, but
I know. I'm saying it'd be a learning. That's why I said we talk about things that are part of history. They belong in museums, not in Hall of Fame or trophy. Where context can be important, right? So
Darryl Green will be on the K Show today. Very good get. 5-4.
I bet you can still run about a 4-5. I think he ran a 4. Like he used to do it every year. He used to do it like run his 40 at like every year on his birthday or something like that. Clocking 4-5 at 46, man. Him and Aeneas Williams, one of the most underappreciated corners in the history of the game.
So just quickly here, Dan Snyder had been pushing against it for a long time, but he does it. And that maybe it was Ron Rivera's input. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was the pressure from, FedEx and everybody else. The 40% of minority owners who all were like, I've had it. We got to change this thing. We're going to do it now. Maybe that's what it is. But they still do it. How much credit does he get any at all for this? Or do you feel like he's only doing it for personal not for personal reasons, but for financial reasons, for obvious reasons.
Yeah, zero. He gets zero for me because he didn't volunteer to do this. He didn't sit down and talk to a bunch of Native Americans and then figure out and come out and say, listen, guys, after meeting with people, I understand how derogatory this term is and how offensive it is and how much hurt it causes to the Native American people. I want to apologize for that. And because of that, we're going to change the name. No, he was forced because of money. Right. And he reluctantly did it. And, the Nike, Pepsi and the people that own 40% of his business or the team was trying to sell it and get out because they didn't want to be associated with him. So for me, he gets zero credit because he was forced to do this. It's like your girlfriend saying, hey, you never say you never tell me you love me. And you say, I love you. It's hollow. Right.
Yeah.
It bears no weight.
Right.
Did the right thing for all the wrong reasons.
But it's done. It's happening. And you can imagine the Cleveland Indians are not going to be too far behind, especially the way Terry Francona had been talking. So we'll see where that goes. But the Atlanta Braves have already said they are not going to change anything. Chicago Blackhawks aren't either. But Washington Redskins no more. What they become remains to be seen. But the popular one still is Red Tails. All right, K-Show coming up next. Bart, this was fun. See you tomorrow.
Holla. Holla, holla.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays from 1 to 3 on 98.7 ESPN.